Hello guys, it's Eric RPG. Brake could not make it today, and I don't know when he'll be available, but I do have a guest, and we're doing another retrospective, this time with Castlevania. And you can introduce yourself.
Oh, hey,
Yes.
this is David McBurney, typically the Q&A Quest podcast on RP Gamer, and I have no other qualifications, if we're being honest.
But yes, other than we play lots of video games named
Oh, disgusting.
Castlevania, yeah. I had actually started playing Lords of Shadow, so that'll be fun to talk about once we get to those.
Oh, boy. I've got
But
strong opinions on Lord of Shadow.
today we're just gonna talk about the Simon Belmont games.
Which there's a frankly horrifying amount if you're willing to go through every time they just sort of remade the castle,
Yeah.
including one of the Lords of Shadow games.
Six games. No, we're just gonna do the six core games.
Yeah.
Lord Shadow gets his own section, but
That makes sense. That makes sense. It's very different.
that'd be Castlevania Vampire Killer for the MSX, and Castlevania II, Simon's Quest, and Castlevania IV or Super Castlevania IV, always just known as Akumajo Dracula.
Yeah. My
which
favorite.
It's different enough to be a sequel with a different number, but at the same time, it's kind of misleading.
Yeah, because, like, in Japan, it is just this is the same story being told again. In the American version, they sort of. The manual cooks up this idea of, like, oh, it's a few months later and cultists are trying to revive Dracula or something.
And which is exactly what happens in the intro for Akumajo Dracula for the Sharp X68K.
Oh man, Chronicles, yeah, that one's hard. Oh my God, one of my personal favorite things about this series is just that the sequel to the first one is literally called Dracula 2.
We just call it Dracula.
The Dracula franchise.
That's so Dracula. I took that from Retro Force Go, if anybody knows what that was. But my phone's going off, so I'm gonna put that on silent.
Yeah, I may have to mute briefly for various purposes. I
I
promise I
made a
was not filming.
series of blunders in the past based on a series of blunders, and I just really fucked up a relationship with a friend, so that's fun.
Oh, boy.
Me being angry in the morning because I wasn't diligent enough to read the entire thread.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well,
And
good luck.
don't ever use Twitter in the morning when you're groggy and you can't read properly or think properly.
Really, just don't use Twitter if you've got the choice.
Yeah. Anyways, Castlevania, the story thereof of Simon Belmont is well, it's different depending on which game we're actually talking about, but for the original Castlevania, it's just he goes fights Dracula.
Dracula's there, he's rude, and he has a castle
But in
to beat him up.
Hahn Castle, he's actually trying to get his wife back, or she was murdered or something. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I
there's
try not
quite a
to
few.
remember about Hahn Castle because that's a terrible game.
Oh man, I've beaten that. That game's really hard.
Not just because it's hard, it's just. There's bullshit mechanics in it.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, if you don't. Like, one of my favorite things about Haunted Castle is that if you don't manage to get the weapon upgrades, the game is basically impossible.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Simon has a sword now, and it's the only way you'll kill anything fast enough to not be killed by
Yeah, otherwise the whip's too slow.
Yeah, like, flea men take, like, 8 hits with the regular whip. It's the worst.
But which is strange, he has a sword in the box art for the game, which is interesting. The box art in the game for the early Castlevania games has mostly been the same per region.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it was really common to change the box art at the time, but I guess they
Also
sort of.
has a pseudo film reel like aspect to it,
Oh, they're really obsessed with that, as Critic for the
which they
Time.
really capitalize on by having actual film reels for the Castlevania 3 box art.
Yeah,
At
and
least
the
for the
opening
Western
scene.
box art.
Well, also the opening scene of Castlevania 3 is a film reel as well.
We're
But.
also going to talk about Castlevania 3 if we have time, but I usually do these for about an hour, but
That's fair.
we can go over because there's like seven games to get through.
Yeah, let's get this started with the
Anyways,
like, which version do we want to discuss first?
Castlevania. or Vampire Killer, as it was known in Europe, which makes it the actual Vampire Killer game for the MSX confusing.
Okay, so Castlevania 1 on the NES and Famicom disk system, and Famicom, actually, it was later released as a cartridge game with an easy mode.
Yes, and that makes it ridiculously easy. Let's see, you get 9 lives, and when you die, you get to keep your soap weapons, and your triple
there's
or
no
double
knockback.
Shot, and there's no knockback, and you take significantly less damage.
Yeah, it's weird.
Which is actually better than the original game, because, like, in the original game, the way they measured damage was just all over the place and terrible.
Yeah. Especially the English version is uniquely harder than any of them, just because the English version had the lack of a save system, because there was no battery to put in it at the time, so they just sort of, whatever, you can just play the entire game at once.
I think that's why they made easy mode, because, like, to make up for the fact that
they'd lost the battery in the cartridge version.
But then,
late life, disc to cartridge ports are very strange.
So unlike other FDS games, the FDS version of the game's soundtrack isn't that much different from the NES's.
Yeah, I don't think it makes meaningful use of the extra sound channel that the FDS offered.
But I don't know what the load times are either. I never played that version.
I would say, like most FPS games, they're relatively comparable because, I mean, it's a floppy disk. It's going to move at a certain speed.
The first level of the game has the memorable Vampire Killer track, which is remixed to hell, and it's in pretty much every Castlevania except Lords of Shadow, except maybe... like as a like a couple notes in Lords of Shadow.
Yeah, there's a very I think a very subtle reference to it in a few tracks in Lords of Shadow. But different time, different story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like original Castlevania is fascinating because it's platformers at the time were relatively fast arcade paced games. Mm-hmm.
This game's much slower. Like, when you jump, you can't control your direction.
Yeah. A theory that I've often had is that Capcom and Konami had a sort of creative rivalry. And what Castlevania feels like is an extension of that creative rivalry where Capcom makes Ghosts and Goblins, so Konami makes Castlevania. And I think that if you consider the idea that they may have... That rivalry may have started by then. You might see where some of the design decisions in Castlevania come from. But Castlevania is a much less random, much less punishing game, even though it is still a very punishing game.
And Castlevania, like with the second stage, is where you fight Medusa, and unlike most of the other stages in the game, its level of music hasn't been remixed, but it's also not that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's mostly, like, classic after classic in terms of tracks, but there's a few that's just like, no one really remembers this, because it's just kind of there.
Wicked Child is another good track for the Stage 3 music, and then you fight the mummy at the end of that one, but that one has been remixed, but not as often as I'd like it to be.
Didn't that one just reappear in Smash Ultimate?
I think it did, actually.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where people were like, oh, they actually got some of the deep cuts and not just the million tracks that got remixed in every game.
And there's Stage 4 where you go to the dungeon.
Yeah, there's an interesting sense of progression of place. Like, this is something that I think 4...
Well, the caves before the dungeon.
Yeah. I think 4 does this the best of the Simon remakes, but in terms of, like... They give an interesting sense of progression of, like, you're going through areas that exist in, like, this ancient dingy castle, which I think gives it a better sense of place than a lot of NES platformers.
So you fight Frankenstein's monster, who has the most annoying enemy in the game aside from the Medusa heads following it. It can't be... Unlike the other ones that you fight in the previous level, this one can't be killed, but it can be stunned.
Oh, I despise Igorahan. First time I actually tried to play the original version of Castlevania, I just got stopped in my tracks by this fight.
Yeah, they were called Hunchbacks, I think. But, like in other games like Castlevania 3, they turned them into goblins for some reason.
Yeah.
And the birds that drop them are unrelenting.
Yeah, anything that can move with that degree of freedom compared to your actual main character who's just... I mean,
not to mention it's completely random how it moves.
Yeah, people talk about Belmont back problems and Belmont struts because of having to fight enemies like this.
But you kill him. There's one really weird trick you can do, just to basically like cheese the game. That's like to get the holy water, and like as long as you can pace when you throw it and then attack in the intermittently when you're throwing it, you can basically stun lock an enemy until they die.
Yeah, there's almost nothing that has an answer for holy water in the first game, and the holy water would never be as strong.
Which is why they completely nerfed it in subsequent games.
Yeah, like, it would never be that strong again, and usually the role of best sub-weapon ends up going to the cross, just because it has such range.
But
in that first game,
like the only, like, level where it's tricky to even use the holy water against the boss to stunlock them, it would be when you're at level 5 and you have to fight death.
always quite a fight. Always quite a fight.
Sickles everywhere.
Man, like, if you need a third person for another episode of this, if you want to talk about the Richter games, I've got some Richter discussion.
But I think he's actually a lot easier in that version, though. I mean, at least the second
version.
Dracula X.
The SNES one?
Screw that one.
Yeah, that one's terrible. That's the one I've got things to say about, because that one has some input. Like, that death can cause input lag.
Or that input lag can cause death, but
it's a self-sustaining cycle.
But when you get to the sixth and final level of the game, technically the game has 18 stages, but the level's divided into blocks.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone actually use these level designations that Castlevania uses, but apparently officially they're called blocks.
But sixth level is when you fight Dracula, and its music is, like, I think it's called Running Out of Time or something like that. And it gives you a sense of urgency, because the music tempos for, like, up to this point has been pretty mellow, but, like level 3, it kicks up again. And you're constantly being chased by bats or the Igors with the birds until you get to near the end.
And that was a proud tradition that would continue in last levels for Simon. Because, I don't know, have you ever seen the last level of Haunted Castle? Because that one, after a while, when you're actually playing, it's like, did the game bug at some point? Am I just going to loop forever?
But if you can make it through that gauntlet of annoyance, you have to fight Dracula, and he teleports around the room, and it's on the NES, it's harder to do it, because he just disappears and reappears at will. Mm-hmm. There's, like, no telegraphed animation for it. Like there would be in the later games. Yeah. And you have to jump up and hit him in the head while avoiding 3 fireballs he throws at you.
I love that, like, they kept doing, like, every time you would fight Dracula in most of the later games, like, you would get at least one stage where he's essentially doing that.
Yeah. But, like, every game they did that in, he was subsequently easier. It's like, oh, we're doing this again, so we might as well make it really easy.
Yeah. There were some where they gave him other tricks while he's doing that. 4 does a good thing with that.
Yeah, but four he, like, second phase of that first half of the fight is he'll summon 2 fire spirits that were previously shown in the third game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit them, they'll create fire on the ground, which makes it harder to move. But once they also do that, he'll summon fire from the 2 sides of the room, like he did in Castlevania 3.
Yeah, but, I really like it.
But he'll be very chivalrous, and he'll do a fireball attack that you can whip, and if you can survive you can survive the little pellets of fire that happen when you hit it, and it splits, meat falls out.
I'm curious what he had enchanted with that fireball to do that, but very polite.
And
I'm sure you're honored, yes.
And he could do that a couple times, and you can actually bait him into doing it, but
I've never baited him into doing it, but it's a very strange attack, and
I think you have to avoid fighting some of those fireballs for a while, or
that would explain.
Or if you go under a certain damage threshold.
Yeah, 4 just has a lot of politeness that we'll get into when we're discussing that one, but
the second phase of the first game's fight is he turns into a giant demon that jumps around everywhere, and he's actually easier than you think, but harder to avoid than you'd also think because of the hitboxing.
Yeah, that form is much, much more vulnerable to the stun locking on the holy water.
That's why they put it there. Because you could use the boomerang to handle its first form, then pick that up, and then use that instead, if you still have hearts left.
Yeah, that's the real problem. It's like, if you've been dying repeatedly, well, you better be making sure you got some hearts.
So unlike Castlevania 4, where it gives you a secret area and an invisible staircase that just refills you to the max.
Yeah, that secret area you're only going to find if you make a boneheaded jump.
But
that one's ridiculous because it also gives you a cross and like a 2 or a 3, I can't remember.
But you beat the game and the game decides to go nuts and make a parody of credits where all the credits are all referencing horror movies from the 50s and like the black and white era.
Yeah, like the entire game is kind of like a elongated reference to like 50s Universal monster movies, but...
And Dracula's design himself is inspired by Bela Lugosi and
Boris Karloff, Frankenstein right there,
and Christopher Lee, which is named Christopher B in the credits here.
An incredible name.
And it was like Borla Karloffis instead.
And they, like, Konami's English localizers would continue to have a fascination with, like, really dumb joke enemy names for a very long time. And I've never actually checked what these credits look like in Japanese to see if they're the same nonsense.
Now, Vampire Killer is an MSX game that is definitely not as good as the NES game.
Yeah, there's oftentimes I see people trying to work out which of these games entered development first, like which is the original Castlevania because they came out so close to each other. But the MSX game came out later, but would have had to go through less product approval because it was an MSX game, not a Nintendo game. And there's also the fact that the MSX game, if you manage to reach the credits, which I don't recommend because that game is mean, it does thank the Castlevania Famicom staff.
Anyways, Vampire Killer is the name of Simon's Whip, which is a famous whip that was given to him by, depending on whether or not you consider Lament of Innocence a canon, which Iga did, because he went and retconned all the games to give them a consistent timeline.
He was the only one that sort of cared for a very long time. Castlevania was just sort of like, yeah, it's another one, Dracula came back.
The original booklets said that, like, the Belmont family made a contract with somebody named the Poltergeist King with. That was smoke blown up our butts. Because we never ever see this Poltergeist King.
This is never shown, and again, I think that's in the manual, which Konami of America took some liberties there.
This is like some Sonic-level Mobius nonsense.
It makes me think of how yesterday I was looking at like Nintendo style guides in Nintendo of America that said that Yoshi's full name was T. Yoshi Sore Munchakoopas. I feel like he should be referred to as at all times. But
Vampire Killer was like basically a whip that was enchanted through alchemy by a guy named Ronaldo.
Yeah. The Man of Innocence doesn't have a lot of plot, but what plot it does have exists to just sort of set up, like, this is where it all came from, this is the start, please forget Castlevania Legends.
Like, the only problem I have with The Man of Innocence is that it kind of needed another game to go with it, but we didn't get it. But,
good, but it's a different game.
Which might have explained, like, what exactly Matthias was doing before he decided to rename himself Vlad Tepes.
Yeah, there's a lot... There's a lot of, like, possible bridge material there that Iga never really tapped and no one thus will ever tap again.
When you get to... This game is kind of like a Metroidvania, but, like, more like La Milana in that it's, like, single screens only. There are no scrolling screens.
It's flick screen. It does have discrete levels, but it is built around this idea you need to... explore through the level until you find the way to get to the end.
Yeah, finding all the keys, that sounds fun.
Oh, it's miserable. One of my favorite things, by favorite I mean not favorite at all. So this game does have sub-weapons. Mm-hmm. So you can get things like the cross. You don't pay for them. They replace your normal weapon because an MSX controller couldn't be guaranteed to have more than one button. But if you like throw the cross... The only way to get it back is to make sure you catch it when it's coming back.
Oh, you lost it? Never, too bad.
Yeah, too bad, buddy. Now you get your whip again.
They could have at least given you, like, a dagger to fight with.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a mean game. The other thing is that the game is basically a conspiracy to sell you an official branded Konami cheat cartridge for your MSX.
Because it came with it, didn't it?
No, it didn't come with it. What it did is you had, I believe, one life, and then it was game over. Start the entire game over, unless you had the Konami branded cheat cartridge.
Or you save states.
Yeah, now, the compromise that I did is when I played this, I booted up the game with the cheat cartridge in the correct slot, because the MSX had multiple cartridge slots for some reason. And, like, that was a way that I could feel like, okay, I did this legit enough.
I don't think the game has bosses, like, other than Dracula.
I feel like it has. It does, actually, because the first one you do fight a giant bat.
I don't think they have a health bar, though. So it's like,
yeah, you can't tell how well you're doing.
So it's like they're bosses, but they might as well not be.
Yeah, except for the fact that they're really irritating.
But when you get to Dracula, he's actually a painting.
Yeah, oh man, you have to jump up. To actually hit him, you'd have to do a lot of platforming. It's hard. Like, the entire game is just small mazes. There's a lot of times where to go forward, you're just going to be whipping a lot of random walls.
Yeah, otherwise you'll just loop until you figure out what you need to do.
Yeah, like, if you've ever wondered where Simon's Quest came from, Simon's Quest feels like someone tried to make a sequel to Castlevania and MSX Vampire Killer at the same time.
That leads us into Castlevania 2.
Yeah, the beloved one. You've heard of that one. The one that the happy internet man loves.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
Welcome to Step Into the Shadow of the Hell House.
Let's see. This game for the NES did not have a battery backup system, but it did have a password system. The passwords weren't too long. They weren't like River City Ransom long and ridiculous. They were relatively easy to remember.
They weren't Dragon Quest II in Japan long.
They weren't.
Those were like 64.
Yeah, let's make the passwords weird phrases.
Oh man!
Those and this game is kind of like their answer to The Legend of Zelda: Link's Adventure. Legend of Zelda 2.
Yeah, Zelda 2: Adventure of Link. It's got that sort of style to it. It was very much like the period where NES games were trying to sort of move away from, like, this is just like the arcade, because, I mean, they couldn't replicate
it. As a night-day cycle, and it's technically an RPG, because if you kill enough enemies, your health will increase.
And that's really useful after a while. But also, like, the night and day system affects its multiple ending system, which was also very strange.
Which is based on how fast you can beat the game.
Yep. And if you don't know exactly what you're doing, you won't get the good ending.
The good ending's technically not the best ending, but it's also the best ending because it's basically paying homage to horror movie stingers.
Oh, yeah. This game does have in the few places
it's less more like a, oh, you fucked up, and more of a, there's gonna be another game.
Yeah, pretty much. Unlike the super bad ending where it's just like, also Simon died of his wounds.
So the idea of this is that the plot is that when you beat Dracula in Castlevania, he cursed Simon to have to search for his body parts and resurrect him, or he'll die.
Yeah, and Simon's like, it seems like a fair.
This is before the cultists decided to put a curse on Dracula that just has him resurrect every 100 years unless they intervene.
Yeah, oh man, they had to come up with a lot of strange places to put Dracula back together in. But, yeah, and again, known in Japan as Dracula 2, which I will never get over.
The Cursed Seal. the Accursed Seal, sorry.
Yeah, you know, accursed, vaguely. But yeah, this is it's an impressive, ambitious sort of game for, like, the 1988 or so it came out.
This game also technically has bosses, but you could just ignore most of them.
The only boss in the game you are forced to fight is Dracula himself. You want to fight the Gold Mask because, one, he's super easy, and two, he gives you a sub-weapon, but...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sub-weapons are also no longer powered by hearts, except the ones that are. It's super inconsistent.
Yeah, and your hearts are money.
Yeah, and you use money to buy better whips. I guess the Vampire Killer isn't that important.
Or, and you also need to buy a sub-weapon that you need to get to through Dracula's Castle and a couple other places.
Oh, the stake itself, which if you don't, if you throw it at anything else, it does nothing. But if
and
you
lose
it.
Or,
yeah, like you have to go back and buy it. Like the game has some mercy if you're in. In
also, you can only hold one at a time, so you can't stock them up, which is
yeah.
stupid.
What little mercy the game has is that while you're in a hell house, the day-night timer has stopped. So you can, if you need to grind for money, you do it inside a hell house.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm going to keep calling them hell house.
Hell house. Yeah, I remember reading the credits scroll for the attract mode. It's like, welcome to the hell house.
It is very strange to see an NES game at the beginning. Usually if you were going to see something that skirted the Nintendo censors, it was going to be later in the game when no one actually
also, this
it.
Game has the designation of being on the cover of Nintendo Power and having a beheaded Dracula, which apparently caused kids nightmares, so they had to change it.
Listen, if I had had Nintendo Power at the time, it would have terrified me. But... Yeah, like, that Nintendo Power is also the only reason that anyone finished it. But I do think that there are some virtues of this game that often get overlooked. The game has the infamous sections where you have to hold down while holding a orb to get past impassable objects. And that's nonsense. But it's also more consistent nonsense than people give it credit for. There are multiple places where the same technique works.
Mm. Also, I was wrong with the experience system. Like, apparently hearts powers your experience, but you gotta kill things to get hearts, so basically same.
Yeah, I guess the idea is that the hearts were pulling double duty, like, they're acting as both your money and
so
your experience.
It's Dark Souls!
Oh, be right back, I'm gonna write a think piece.
But, anyways, the Hell Houses themselves were kinda interesting, cause, like, part of me wants to know, why do they have all these mansions, and why didn't we visit them before? Oh, wait.
Yeah, they're kind of neat. Like, they are very Adventure of Link sort of things. They have false floors constantly. You end up constantly throwing holy water, since it costs nothing to throw, and it really is only useful in this one. It's the weakest it'll ever be in this one,
also,
because all it does...
Also, some of the sub-weapons that you get are as a result of having Dracula's body parts, and you lose them when you fight Dracula. Like, the ability to use the shield. Like, the rib is a shield.
Yeah, yeah, that does remind me. The rib as a... the shield that you get with the rib is basically ripped wholesale from Vampire Killer on the MSX. But, yeah, like, there's some interesting things where, like, you use Dracula's parts to get at things. There's a lot of sub-weapons that would just never show up again. Like, the Laurel, which isn't really a weapon, but is, like, something that's required and takes a sub-weapon slot.
Oh, there's also the Garlic, but that was sort of replaced with the Holy Ash in
the
Symphony.
Ash in Symphony.
But, only the Ash disappears after a while. I think the garlic just sticks there until something hits it.
Yeah. And then, of course...
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, or you just leave the screen. It kind of just doesn't disappear.
Yeah, but it'll stay there as long as the screen doesn't transition in any fashion. But the other thing, of course, that's infamous about this game is just the constant lying down to people, which... affected Iga so deeply and personally that he just is like, I don't want townspeople because I remember them in 2 and they lied and I hated them.
It's like they lied even in the Japanese version. It's like,
yeah, there was at one point, I think it's mostly dispelled by now, but there was that internet rumor that, like, oh, they're trying to give you useful advice, but they're not translated properly. And it's like, no, you look at the Japanese version, they are telling you the exact same lies.
But, that leads us to, let's see, Haunted Castle, which has the most bizarre marketing ad I've ever seen.
Oh, I've seen this thing. This thing's weird. Those arcade flyers, like, I'm not even sure who would have seen this other than an arcade operator. I mean, it's not like you advertised arcade machines that way in the U.S. or Japan.
I can't expand it on the link here that I have. I'm looking at the Wikipedia article. it's too bad it's too small, but it says some really weird and strange things, and it has some girl in a weird dress that's out of the time period that this game's supposed to take place in.
Yeah, because this is Simon again, just Castlevania 1 again. What information I've ever been able to find on this says that this game actually, as far as arcade games go, this actually had a really troubled development. And I believe it, because it's full of, like, weird bespoke assets that only show up once, and strange balancing decisions that make it seem like someone just sort of had to push it out the door. And it also has, like, four versions, and all of them are different, are impossible, but there's various levels of impossible.
Also, the game somehow decided it'd swap out holy water for actual bombs, like cartoon bombs.
Oh, they're all, like, all the sub-weapons in this game are crazy. It's also got the most broken pocket watch in the series, because normally the pocket watch, like, you use it as a... You use it, and it stops time for most obstacles, but, like, anything really powerful, especially bosses it doesn't work on, it works on bosses in this game. And not only that, normally it's also a really expensive sub-weapon. It takes, like, 10 hearts minimum. It takes 2 hearts in this game.
Broken.
It's ridiculous. You want to carry it as far as you can into the game. The game will eventually try to drop other sub-weapons on you.
Also, it has kind of redundant sub-weapons with the boomerang and the crosses. They are effectively the same thing.
The cross is crazy in this one, too, because it shoots lasers. I have no idea what's going on with that one. Like, the boomerang is useless. You're going to miss it when it tries to come back, and then whoop, it's gone. But
it also has torch weapon, which seems like they lifted that straight out of Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, that's another one of those, like, maybe this series was very specifically Konami's answer to Ghosts and Goblins, because this is just this is just a torch.
But the most interesting tracks in this game, the soundtrack, is the very first level called Crush Your Heart.
Yeah, oh, that song is so good. It's also translated, like, it took me a while to realize that what it's actually trying to say is not, like, cross your heart. Specifically, it's also translated as crucifix held close. Which, I guess, like, makes it less artistic and more like you're literally clutching a crucifix to try to survive.
Then there's, Clockwork's Beat. Which, yeah. Which is... much better named as Underground Melodies and Donna Sorrow.
Yeah. This is a game that is almost impossible to recommend as an experience of play. It's horrible. You get one life.
Also, I think Dracula throws knives at you instead of fireballs.
He does, but he's even weirder because, like, he teleports around the screen but never to the corner that you start the screen in. So if you have anything that shoots projectiles, particularly the cross, you can just laser him in 2 seconds and it's over. Including his second form where he's just a giant head. But, like, this is a game that's super hard to recommend on pure gameplay value. It's heinously difficult. You have a total of 4 lives, but it makes no sense to not just...
Also, a very not generous timer, because you do have a timer.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's a timer. Like, I've never gotten a timeout in any other Castlevania game, but there are a few.
If you're willing to, like, hurt yourself, you could buy the Hamster's emulated version on PS4. And
yeah, there's a couple of versions. I think the international version was version K, and that's reduced in difficulty somewhat, but it's a super memorization-heavy game, and the only real way to get through it is to... When you put in a quarter, like, it gives you up to 4 quarters worth of life, but you can do that sequentially, or you can just insert all your quarters at once and get one huge life bar.
Yeah.
Just the
daddy. Also... The game has a limited amount of continues, despite the fact you could put more money in.
Yeah, like if you use 4 life bars worth of quarters, the game is going to start you over regardless of what you do. And
so
yeah,
mean.
Like it's even weirder because like you get to the second half, and like I save stated to learn the first half.
Also,
and then I just...
a weird thing about this game is that the games alternate between going left and right.
Yeah, they do that. There's one that goes straight up, like you're on this rapidly moving elevator and just bashing your head against rocks. And the only mercy there is that those rocks do like 2 points of damage, and if you got 4 quarters worth of health, you've got over 70. Mm-hmm. But, like, the game kind of loses its mind about halfway through, and like, because the first three levels are sadistically hard, like they're very designed hateful, whereas the last three, you can tell that they were just sort of running out of time and pushed them out the door, because they are still hateful, but they aren't carefully considered, so there's a lot of time. Like, I save-stated through the first three levels to try to learn them, and then just accidentally beat the last three levels in one shot.
Also, the absolute best track in this game is called Heart of Fire, which had a much better remix than Aria of Sorrow.
Oh, it's a great track. The soundtrack is great. Like, a lot of the sprites are really neat to look at, even if they're kind of hideous. So, like, I recommend looking at a long play of this on YouTube, but I don't recommend playing it.
Also, Simon's hair is mysteriously black for some reason.
Blue in some shape.
Even though it's canonically supposed to be blonde, or rather, if you're going by the Iga timeline, red.
Yeah, if you give Ayane Kojima a pen and ask her to draw, if you ask her to draw Simon, she's going to draw this red-haired man. Very pretty boy. But, which I, you know, like, that's a good design. Like, I think all the designs.
I think he was supposed to be canonically redhead, but they couldn't fit the colors in with the limited palette of the NES.
There's a lot going on with.
So they decided to make him blonde, kind of like what they did with Samus.
Yeah, they do a lot of that with NES palette limitations, where it's like, oh, your hair is this color because that's what we've got palette for.
But
yeah, there's blue haired, and he also is like Dracula's the aggressor in this one. Like most other Castlevania games, when Simon goes into the castle, there's no real indication of what caused him to go, other than like if you read the manual.
I'm a vampire hunter, so I kill vampires.
Yeah, whereas in this one, Dracula, like, he's clearly just gotten married, and Dracula just comes in, steals his bride, leaves.
It's like, did they have bad blood before or something?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it seems like they're sort of positioning this as like, oh, Dracula came back and he wants revenge, but it's just weird. It's just really weird.
Which is weird, because like, the original Bram Stoker's book was about how Dracula was supposed to be gay, and him being a monster was supposed to be the analog to what religious people thought of gay people at the time.
Yeah, like, vampires typically stand in for what society is scared of or hates, and so Dracula's a lot of things, but in Bram Stoker's, it's very definitely a homosexuality concept going on.
But Super Castlevania IV, which we mentioned was just known as Komodo Dracula or Demon Castle Dracula.
Yeah, this one's kind compared to its predecessors.
Yeah, like you can whip in like a bunch of directions, and by holding down the button and then just whipping it wherever, it does significantly less damage that way. But you can also get more control over the whip.
Yeah, and that, it's really useful for certain contexts where your whip is just trying to stop a projectile.
Or you could use it to grapple somewhere.
Oh, those are neat. They're not difficult, but they're cool, so you kind of forgive it, because it's a fun house of, like, oh, it's rotation. But,
Oh, yeah, it also introduced, or at least, this is probably the only Castlevania game to have Mode 7 in it, because Dragalox did not have anything like that, where the graphics would scale.
Yeah, like, a lot of the game is it's like, this level is us designing a sort of level design trick around an SNES hardware mode.
It's like, we want to do 3D, but we can't, so let's do this intermediary.
It spins, it moves background layers, look at all this.
And that's like no more truer than the fourth level of the game, where you enter a room and you have to cling on to the grappling hook and hang on for dear life while it rotates. And then once you get, like, a break, you'll have to fend off a couple Medusa heads, and then before it spins again, and then the way forward goes up through. And after that, you're in a room full of falling platforms you have to quickly move through, and the background is, like, this rotating barrel of fun.
Yeah, like, you're in some sort of weird concave barrel. I'm not sure what that's supposed to be.
And all these skeletons are popping out of the walls.
Yeah, the platforms in that don't actually fall very quickly. Like, if you're moving at any sort of speed, they won't. It's just meant to make it look like you're in trouble.
Then you fight a giant skull that tries to lick you, so it's Lickitung's brother or something.
His name is Puxle, which is just licks you up backwards.
Yeah. And then the second half of the level has you trying to avoid getting crushed by these moving platforms, and then and some spikes, and then you have to fight a giant stone man who is all mode 7'd out, and he slowly shrinks and gets harder to fight because he moves faster.
And then when he's done, he just grows and shrinks again, just yeah. in case you weren't that interested. Oh, man. I think this might also be the one, like, this was Konami of America having too much power in terms of how they were going to rename characters, because I'm pretty sure that this one also has the ones that are labeled Fred Astaire and Paula Abdul.
Why? I saw a hack of this recently called Other Castle, which does a couple interesting things. It has a lot more grappling hook segments, which are nasty, but that's part of the hack that I didn't care for. But what I did like was that the three boss gauntlet before Dracula has been split up.
Yeah, that's actually, like, the game is pretty lenient for the most part early on, but it gets, by the end, it's really actually quite mean once you get to that boss gauntlet.
And this game, along with Contra 3, is interesting because of it, not just the quality of its soundtrack, but the overall composition of the soundtrack is made to emulate a movie that would be befitting of a game like this.
Yeah, there's a lot more, like, Castlevania IV's, like, selling point, aside from, you know, being a very good Castlevania game, is that it's the first one that really can display an atmosphere of journey and, like, peaks and valleys in terms of, like, Simon's crossing the countryside, and then he gets to the castle, and then he gets dumped into, like, a more foreboding part of the castle, and, like, it's the soundtrack and the visuals are much better able to convey that.
It's like, we already did the whole castle, why not we do the game about getting to the castle?
One of the things I really love about it that almost none of the other games have is that the castle has a treasure room in this one, and that's a really neat level. Mm. You get gold skeletons, and you fight a giant gold bat.
Also, there's a treasure room in the dance hall where there's a hobo with a dog, and if you kill the dog, he'll cry for that dog.
Yeah, that's a lot of good attention to detail. Also, don't do that. You're a monster.
But the dog's just jumping around, and he's hurting me.
Listen, he's a dog. He's just excited to see you. it's not the dog's fault Simon's allergic to dogs.
It's like, yeah. the music is something. And it features, like, remixes from Bloody Tears and Beginning from Castlevania 3.
But it hides most of those towards the end when it's pumping you up for the final fight.
Which reuses a track from the first level, but it's more fitting there because it's the way the game starts. It's the way it probably should end.
Yeah, it's one of the, like, the game is super built around its big star of a new composition, Theme of Simon, and it uses that a lot. It uses it to the hilt to sort of drive big parts of the game home. Oh, man. Da, 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 da. That's a really, it feels really good when you get to the end of that final boss fight and it actually just starts piping in the Theme of Simon.
Yeah. But like I said, there's a three boss gauntlet where you have to fight Slogra, which is a big bird man skeleton thing.
In every other game, Slogra is a complete joke, but
yeah. But here you hit him, he'll jump up in the air, not give you very much time to get out of the way before he falls back down on you, and he has a brief period of invincibility before he starts lunging at you.
Yeah, and he has a lot of contact damage. He is surprisingly, bafflingly hard if you're used to, like, oh, the joke is starting Symphony and just clowning on this guy.
Which also is paralleled in Gabion, which is a big gargoyle that just shoots fire at you. But in this game, he just jumps all over the place, and it's hard to hit him at all. And until he lands.
And then...
then I'll just brave a bunch of other bigger fireballs in front of your face, and you'll probably die if you don't kill him quick enough.
And then if that wasn't enough, you get to fight Death.
Yeah. So, and if you die at any point during that, you have to do it all again.
Let's fight Slogra again. He missed you.
But yeah. They do give you health afterwards, but it's not a full heal, unfortunately.
Yeah. It will not. If you've gotten completely trashed in both, you're still going to be going in with a handicap.
So I wouldn't mind a hack for this game that just lets you start from the last boss you killed.
Yeah, it's super mean. Super mean. But it's a really good game that I feel like its stature somewhat fell when people start, like, there's a certain...
Although that's almost complete joke compared to how much of a pain in the ass it was in the first Castlevania. Or the third.
Oh, yeah, especially if you know that is the use case for the Limp Whip, is that you can use it to stop his scythes. But I feel like this game's stature decreased a bit when people started decrying the 8-Way Whip as being something that neuters the game. But I think
this is the only Castlevania that lets you assign the special weapon to the X or the R button or anywhere else.
Yeah, like you can use a sub-weapon while you're doing it, and the whip can take care of a lot of things that the sub-weapon's used to because it has range and it can hit multiple directions. But I think that it's more that it's a differently designed game than the other ones, because the whip is supposed to be more all-purpose and the sub-weapons are more sub-weapon. They are less useful because they are supposed to be used in very specific situations. But it's a really good game, and, well, it used to be available on Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah.
These all used to be available
on Wii Virtual Console. But if you have Nintendo Switch Online and the SNES listings are true, it might show up again.
Yeah, and, oh man, I hope they are, because those listings were really good.
But that leads us to the last remake of Castlevania, Castlevania Chronicles.
Yeah,
for the Flash. Sharp X68K home computers, or this version specifically was for the PSX.
Yeah, which adds in a range mode that makes the game less just absurdly hard, because, gonna go out on a limb, the original version of this might actually be the hardest version of Simon's Journey outside of Haunted Castle.
Well, I played that, and I beat it somehow. The most difficult boss in the game, by far, is the werewolf.
Yep, the Clock Tower werewolf, who is super impressive the first time that you get its health down to half, and it rips a clock hand off and tries to beat you to death with it. But that thing is so fast, it is a gauntlet just to get to it.
Yeah, because you're climbing up a tower, the clock tower, and all the gears are falling all over the place, and there's places that can crush you in that level.
Yeah, it's just...
Also, the music's really annoying, and it's intentionally annoying.
Like, one of the things that I noticed is, while playing the series, because there was a period a few years ago where I was going back and just playing everything that I had not finished. And so I went to this, I did, the SNES Dracula X. I noticed that they're all within, like, a year. There's, like, three of these. There's Bloodlines, there's the Sharp X, and there's the SNES, and there's Rondo of Blood. And the thing is that it feels like the Sharp X version was designed for people almost like a throwback. Like, it is specifically, like, hard Castlevania, like, none of the advancements from the later games. Like, this is just going to be hard and just beat you into the ground.
Also, like, hardcore, because the intro is pretty violent.
Yeah, well, it's the Sharp X. They aren't answering let's anybody.
Let's have cultists that sort of look like KKKs, although they're all wearing blue, so it's not quite the same thing. But let's have them also crush a heart.
Yeah, it's very much like, well, no one can stop us. It's the Sharp X. No one's going to tell us not to release this.
But it also has a new sub-weapon where you can use the Laurel, which frills your health for 10 hearts.
Yeah, that one's really useful. It's very rare, very, very rare. It's technically, there is a Laurel in 2, but it doesn't do the same thing.
Also, the game kind of trolls you for if you're playing, like, the more, if you play the NES version and you're trying to look for health in the first level, it's not going to be there.
Yeah, there is health on the opposite side of that pillar.
It's full of hunchbacks.
If you try to hit the one on the side that you start that you would find it in the NES game, you will find that it is just an infinite stream of flea mans. It's a very mean game.
Yeah, if you play Castlevania Chronicles, the game also has a couple extra features like time attack mode and an art gallery, which is neat.
Yeah, and it has an arrange mode, which is generally just kind of tones it down to being really hard, but not.
And it also recolors Simon's hair to red to match the cover art, and
reddish purple,
and a complete remix soundtrack. But if you like the original soundtrack, you can put in codes to play with the original soundtrack in arrange mode.
Yeah, that one's frustrating because
there's also codes to like play as the three different sound synthesizers that were used for the original the Sharp game.
Yeah, you could get like the common, like the Roland and the Sharp X was for high rollers, so these games would have these sorts of features. But the thing that's irritating about that in Chronicles is that in the Japanese version, they're just there. Like, you can just access that from the options menu. In the US version, they hit the minor code.
The game also has a sound taster right from the beginning, which not every Castlevania game had, but like, it was appreciated when. Yeah. Like, I think three and four do, but
Game Boy ones have it.
I don't think Dracula X on the SNES did.
I don't think so. I didn't want to listen to that music anyway, because it was just worse versions of Rondo tunes.
And if you played the game on PSX CD, the PC Engine CD, you didn't need to do a sound test, because you could just listen to the Red Bulk audio from the game's disc selection.
Yeah.
Putting it into a player.
Yeah. Oh man, Redbook Audio, we knew you well.
But, like, the only track that isn't Redbook Audio, or the only tracks, were the pre-boss fight music, and the boss fight music that was a remix to Monster Dance from the original game, that where you fight the original Castlevania bosses before you fight Shaft.
Yeah. Oh man, that boss rush is just... exists to justify the existence of the Bible sub-weapon in that game. That can wait for another day, though.
But, this game's level composition's a little wonky, because, like, you start off in the castle before
sort of
the castle.
Courtyard.
Yeah. It's like it's basically like the rest house before you get to the actual castle, but, you go from there to the caves.
Kind of got lost.
And then you fight a dragon zombie skeleton thing.
Yeah, it doesn't have the sense of cohesion that 4 does.
Then it has a remake, mostly a remake of the third level of the game. But then you go back into an ice cave, and then you fight a necromancer that summons a demon that breathes snot on you, I guess?
I mean, I wouldn't want to. I would feel damaged if that happened to me.
Also, I think, like, you see, like, the classic Nosferatu design in one of the ice, prison things.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's got a lot of great art and a lot of great music, but it's one of those, like, a lot of attention seems to have gone into
then the fourth
making the game
level,
hard as nails.
Then the fourth level is basically a remake of the third second level of the first game. But, but you're mostly climbing up. But, it's playing Bloody Tears in the background, and then you get to the fifth level, which is the Clock Tower, and you fight that werewolf.
Yeah.
And then the sixth level is interesting, because it starts out like playing this game, this cool track called like Moonlight something, I forget, but then you go to this place called the Tower of the Dolls, where a bunch of evil dolls try to kill you.
Just sort of going for it. What other horror movie can you do?
Then you fight a doppelganger, Simon.
That guy's got arthritis. Can't be that hard to beat.
And then you go to the last level where you kill Dracula. And the track for this is ridiculous because his name is You Goddamned Bathead. The best track name ever for a Castlevania game.
That's quality.
But his fight is a lot like the way it goes in the original game, only but when you fight the demon, he'll jump up higher in the air, and he'll throw fireballs from above.
It's giving me bad memories.
Which kind of gives you, like, only a brief amount of time to get under him when he's, like, at the edge of the screen.
The game, like, it in general sort of eschews a lot of the changes to the series that they made, but the last level is super strange because it's the only one with multiple paths.
Yeah. It's also playing
because you're going to get bored of doing the same one while you try to get back to Dracula.
It's also playing a nice theme of Simon remix, but
yeah. Dun, dun, dun. But,
yeah. It kind of reminds me of like an unplugged version of that, but in synth.
Yeah.
But let's see, we have time. We could do Castlevania 3.
Yeah, Akamatra Densetsu.
Yeah, or Legend of the Demon Castle. But this one is supposedly the first Belmont. I say supposedly because they later went back on it and made Leon Belmont the first Belmont.
Yeah. But, like, they had, like, there's a convoluted, like, oh, well, he's the first Belmont to fight Dracula.
Yeah. But, this game goes back, let's see, I think he's
100 years before?
Yeah, so he's, like, the great-grandfather of Simon.
Yeah. I used to know the actual lineage between Belmonts a little better, but it's, like, grandfather, great-grandfather, and then Simon's the great-grandfather of, like, Juice.
Yeah, Juice is, no, I think that's actually his grandfather. So yeah, I think it was Simon, then Christopher, and then maybe Christopher's son. And then
Soleil Belmont.
And then it was Juice, so yeah, great-grandfather.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, you get these. But yeah, you get Trevor, who's like the first Belmont to kill Dracula, and that's the sort of title they would pin on him as to why he's. And oh, yeah, in Japan, he's Ralph Belmont.
Yeah. Because also, Belmont is a family name, is Belmondo in all other versions of Castlevania.
Ralph C. Belmondo.
It's like, that's more exotic, so let's go with Belmondo. But, like, when they came to the West, let's make it a more Western name. So
yeah. Interestingly, like, there was originally seemingly some sort of, like, interest in Christopher as, like, an important Belmont. Because, like, I think at one point in development, like, the reason he's Ralph C. Belmont is he's Ralph Christopher Belmont.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I think they eventually just sort of dropped that idea and just made him. Oh, he's the Bel. He fought Dracula twice, which is a pretty good batting average for a Belmont. But,
but you've also got like multiple partners you can join up with that you could switch to in the middle of a level
and different paths. Like you only get certain partners on certain paths.
Yeah. Well, the paths aren't in the levels like Rondo X. Like the game lets you choose before you start a level.
Yeah, it gives the game a lot of replay value. There's a lot of interesting sort of challenge runs to be done. For example, Alucard in this game sucks.
You get Siphia Belnades, who is incorrectly mistakenly as a man in the manual, but oh well.
Yeah, people have had long debates about whether that's a mistake or whether that's them, like, trying to hide it. So
yeah, that's full of Metroid.
Yeah, a lot of Fanon had the idea of, like, oh, well, she, you know, she was trying to hide that she was a woman. I can't remember what the...
Because she's a bitch.
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, that makes sense. But, yeah,
she uses magic, and her most powerful magic is the ability to freeze, and then you could just bash them, and they're dead instantly.
Yeah, her physical attack is useless. Can't she float? Can't remember. It's been
I don't think she can.
Maybe I'm thinking of one of the abilities.
Then she has the lightning, which is the most powerful of her abilities, and then there's the flame bearer, which is technically more powerful because it does a lot more damage, but it's also close range.
You're never gonna get her in a range where that makes sense.
And once you let it off, it makes your baby pretty vulnerable anywhere else.
Yeah, anyone who's played Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon will find all of these characters very familiar because they're all directly knocked off in Curse of the Moon.
And then there's Alucard, who doesn't have any really special weapon powers. He just flies, but he does shoot 3 fireballs in 3 different directions when he's maxed out.
He's just like Dad. But, yeah, and Alucard kind of sucks.
There's also Grant Dynasty. Which is a terrible spelling for the name. It should be Dynasty, like the original Japanese release.
Yeah. Don't think about it.
Who apparently, the director of the Castlevania show on Netflix hated that name, so he excluded him entirely from the show.
Unless
season 3 introduces him somewhere.
Yeah, well, that continues a line from when the show was originally going to be a movie penned by Warren Ellis, who apparently just, like, despised the idea of this pirate in medieval Europe and said no. and so wrote Grant and Asti out of his version as well. And I think the show at least used that script as a base.
But he can climb on ceilings or like the sides of platforms.
Yeah, he has a very short range in the English version, but in the Japanese version, he can both climb on walls and ceilings and throw daggers infinitely.
Yeah, throw daggers infinitely, and his only other sub-weapon is the axe. I think he can use a stopwatch, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I've never tried to use it with him. Like, his capacity to scurry around the stage is powerful enough that he's worth taking at any point.
Yeah, speedrunners use him a lot. One with Alucard to just fly anywhere.
Yeah, turn into a bat and fly anywhere.
Yeah.
But
depending on who you beat the game with, you'll get, like, one of four endings.
Yeah, it's neat.
And, like, the other character will show up in the ending, but, like, they'll make specific reference to your partner character if you play as him, but not as if you play as him for some reason.
Yeah. This game was really ambitious, and we really got kind of hosed on the North American release.
Also, Sifia ends up hooking up with Trevor.
Yeah, that's where all the Belmonts come from.
And it's also where all future Belmonts come from. So they're cousins, and Arya Sarge.
It was medieval Europe.
Yeah, Julius and Yoko are cousins.
It didn't seem that weird in medieval Europe, but Julius and Yoko got... they would understand that their family tree is weird. it's a really neat game, and it's a great cap off to the trilogy on the Famicom, and the NES version is really good. It's just, it's obviously been tinkered with specifically to make it worse.
Some people argue that the Japanese version's FRC chip that improves the music substantially is not as good, but I think that's just nostalgia talking.
Yeah, it's a bit sour grapes. It's the VRC6 is a crazy chip, and I think it adds like 3 additional sound channels.
I think the VRC4 was used for the original Contra as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
But like, instead of improving the music, it just improves the color palette, which is better.
It also, it does some other things. There's animation backgrounds in the Japanese...
Oh yeah, and cutscenes.
Yeah. If you want to, like, throw a rundown of, like, what Konami did to their English releases of the Famicom games, there's a video by a YouTube channel called Stop Skeletons from Fighting that hits a decent hit list of what they did. But it's interesting.
And this game was released on cartridges in Japan, so it still uses a password system.
Yeah, it was also, like, they wouldn't have been able to do the VRC6
But for whatever reason, the 10 life code that gives you 10 lives was only available in the Western versions for some reason.
Maybe because they made the Western version way harder.
But, like, all you have to do is type in your name in as help me.
Listen, if you're willing to ask the game politely for help, it's good that it would oblige. But, yeah, like, the big thing that always sticks out off the top of my head, like, they made Grant less powerful, which is fine. He's super powerful anyway. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that they did was they made it so that enemy attack power to your health in terms of contact damage is determined by where you are in the game. The farther you are in, the more damage they will do every time they hit you.
Level up enemies, yay.
So by the time you hit the last level, like, you can take 4 hits, that's it.
It's one of the reasons I never beat the game, legitimately.
Yeah. It's super hard. Generally, like...
Because when you get the Dracula, he has 3 phases. He has a standard phase, but instead of just shooting fireballs at you, he'll shoot fire from the ground. And there'll be 2 pillars of that, and then they'll turn into a giant collection of heads that puke on you with blood. And then he'll turn into a giant demon who takes off 2 sections of the floor, so if you fall on it, you die. And you have to hit him in the head. And he shoots lasers at you all while doing this. I mean, it's pretty easy to beat the lasers, but, like, knowing when he's actually going to do it is hard, because he's kind of a static background enemy at that point.
Yeah. You gotta love how much big sprites on the NES ultimately turned into. This is a background tile set that we're moving.
Which is also the second form of death. He just turns into a giant head and just rotates. But it's hard to hit him since, like, he's pretty much sitting where you need to jump on the platform to hit him in the first place. But, with that, we are done with all the Simon games.
All the Simon games, and it felt wrong to leave off the end of the NES trilogy.
Yeah. So, next week we'll be covering the Game Boy games.
Oh, man, I got a lot to say about those if you'll have me back.
Yeah. Until next time, see you guys later. Bye-bye.
See ya.
And again, see ya.